Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
It's been a while since I've done some search and rescue stories. But I finally got enough again to be able to do it, and these ones are pretty strange. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, whether it's a search and rescue story or something different, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this channel going. Now, without any further hesitation, let's dive right into these creepy, strange, and downright spine-tingling stories of search and rescue operations gone terribly wrong. I've always believed in monsters. They're human. Well, that's what I've always believed. That said, I had a part in a search and rescue mission a while back that changed my beliefs to a degree. You ever just go to work one day and feel like something is off? To get to the point, we had a man go missing in the woods in Mississippi. Now, I know, I'm not being specific. And if you live in Mississippi, you may be thinking, woods, that's like 3/4 of the state. Well, you're right, and it's intentional. I don't right understand what happened during this search, but shortly after this man went missing, we got reports of at least 12 more missing individuals. All seemed unrelated, except that they went missing in the same area. The time span was rather short, all went missing within a couple of weeks at most of this man. We'd done a few other searches as well. We found nothing to really go on. I should mention I am a sheriff. As such, when the actual search and rescue was lifted on some of these, I was still working some of the cases. Unofficially, we were still searching, of course, but publicly, we had to let go of the search. In other words, we had to let go of many of the resources used in the early stages of a search. A few more weeks go by and I get a phone call about the missing man. Someone swears they had seen him walking around near their cabin an hour ago. I get the address and head up to the location, figuring it will likely be a dead end or a case of mistaken identity. That said, I'm not going to simply let a lead die though. If it were one of my own family members, I'd hope law enforcement was doing all it could to find what happened to them. I reach the location, a rather remote area in the woods, just on the edge of accessibility. I walk up and knock on the cabin door. An older gentleman greets me, and he looks shaken. The man is sweating and shaky. I calm him down and make sure he is okay, but as I'm doing this, he asks me if I saw the man. I tell him I just got here and I haven't seen anyone. Once he's a little calmer, I have the guy walk me through what he saw prior to my arrival. The man explains to me that a man that is definite match for my missing persons case came by and asked for help. He explained he looked ragged and like something had tried to eat him alive. The man then shows me a picture he took. The picture is a sure match of the man. I'm shocked and it takes me a second to compose myself before I ask him which way the man went or what happened to him. The older man looked at me dead in the eyes and mentioned that he went to grab his phone and make a call. And when he looked back, the man was just gone. I asked what he meant by that, at which point he simply said, "Gone," as in he just vanished. I wasn't sure what to make of this, so I thanked the man and left his cabin, beginning a search of the area. I searched for the better part of 4 hours before it started to get dark. I informed the man in the cabin that I'd be returning around sunup the next day to continue my search, and I'd bring back things in the process if I needed to, just so he was aware we may be roaming his property. A few minutes later, I get in my truck and start it up. I look up, and standing before me was the missing man. I look at my door and open it, and by the time I shut it, the man isn't around anymore. I'm of course thinking that, what in Sam hell is happening? I decide he couldn't go on too far and decided to have a thorough look around the area to make sure that he wasn't there. Just to make sure I wasn't seeing things, you know, because people don't just vanish. As I'm searching, I'm finding no footprints and no real sign of anyone having been around. Considering there was dirt everywhere, you would think something would turn up. I take my flashlight and continue on over a hill, and that's when I see the man again. He looks ragged, pale, and bloody. I tell the man to stay where he is, and I'll help him out. I'm about to make a phone call as I'm heading toward the man when he lets out two words, "Help me." I look at the man and inform him I'm going to make a call, and I'll assist him momentarily. I just need to get an ambulance out here, and we'd have a look at him. As I'm about to make the call, the man gives me an empty expression and points toward the horizon. I ask him what he is trying to tell me, and all he says is, "Help me." He's still pointing toward the horizon, so I head that way. Just over the hill, I see something that shakes me to my core. The man is now further down the hill, still repeating the same two words. I look behind me and notice he isn't there anymore. I'm confused, but I figure I'll keep following, and as I do, he continues pointing into the distance and asking for help. It is a half hour later when I crest a peak and look far below. There's a man, pointing down at something in the darkness. I shine my light and notice there's a body bleeding and almost motionless on the ground. I rush down, and to my amazement, it's the same man. I look up and there is no one around. Just the man who seems like he is barely holding on. I get a team to help me get the man out of the valley, and the second we got him to the ambulance, he is rushed off. The man has a rough few weeks ahead of him before he is finally coherent and able to speak to us. He explained how he was attacked by something. He never saw what it was. He had a look of terror on his face as he explained it hunted him and eventually incapacitated him. Through tears, he explained how he never saw what attacked him, but he could sense it was there. He also explained, while running from it, he took a spill. He explained how he kept trying to leave the woods, but he'd gotten lost and was a little bit out of it after the first attack. He said he thought he was going to die, and the closer he got to death, the closer he felt this thing was. He couldn't explain how he knew or why, just that it was the worst feeling that he'd ever felt in his life. The man went on to explain that he just remembered praying that he'd get to see his family again, and how he just kept focusing on that thought and praying to God for help. The man is fine today, and I'm no closer to understanding the miracle that led to his survival. About 6 months after we found the man, we found a cave, and in it was something I'll never forget. There were flesh and body parts scattered all over it from several human remains. I'm not sure what is out there, but something clearly killed these people. The man was found and is lucky to be alive, and I firmly believe some kind of higher power had to be looking out for him. I'm not sure how to explain the man appearing and leading me to the body. Perhaps it was his guardian angel, perhaps there's some other explanation. I'll probably never know for sure. Still, he's alive today because of this, and while I'm perplexed as to the intricacies of how he is alive and what led us to him, I'm grateful he is home with his family. Most searches, specifically ones that go into long searches like this, don't end as happy as this one did.
I've been with the Forestry Service in Colorado for a good 27 years now. The story I'm going to share isn't really mysterious. I know a lot of you you know, like those kind of stories on this channel. Most of the stories on this channel are strange and mysterious stories, but this one just isn't that, I'm sorry. This is more about a search and perhaps the will of humanity to live on. We had a woman go missing in the Rockies in mid-February of 98. Now, we found her relatively quickly, but due to the weather, we were unable to get to her. She was wedged in a hole inside the mountain range. The woman was missing for a day and had no real food and was surviving off a couple of bottles of water and the snow around her. By the time we found her, it felt as though everything could go wrong, went wrong. I'm not saying anything otherworldly was happening. It was simply that the snow and windy weather were extreme and made any attempt to reach the woman almost impossible for a time. The first day I spoke with her and reassured her we could see her and we would get to her as soon as the weather permitted. The woman was grateful, but you could hear the doubt in her voice. I suspect she knew what the weather was doing and that it wasn't going to cooperate and that she would be probably there a good while longer. Day 2, since finding the woman, and the weather only got worse. The snow was intense and the wind was cold. I continued to speak to the woman, whose voice was now getting raspy from shouting. I informed her, over a bullhorn, to save her voice and hang in there. I told her we'd get her home, but she needed to hang on a little longer. I kept a firm assurance in my voice, but I was starting to get worried internally. Checking the forecast didn't allay any worries either. There was an even bigger system set to roll in later that night, and it'd be even colder. The blizzard-like conditions didn't look like they'd be ending for the foreseeable future. It was around evening that the search team had to go save for myself. I couldn't leave this woman down there to the elements. I went back to my truck, got some gear, and prepared to do the unthinkable. I was going to go down there and try to get this woman out. It was against all rules, but in my mind, at least, this woman was likely going to die if we left her down there much longer. The snow was blinding, but I knew the general direction to head in. I attempted to call out to her, but I got no response. The wind was too heavy and the snow was heavier. I didn't think it would be likely that I'd be able to hear her, but I kind of hoped I'd get lucky and get a response. As I put in an anchor and grabbed my rope, I made my way down. As I tried to slowly make my way down into the crevice, I slipped almost immediately and was blown around, hanging on for dear life. The situation was dire, but I tried to focus on the mission at hand and did my best to ignore the danger surrounding me. The cold cut through my gear like a knife and my skin froze the further down I got. I kept thinking about how dangerous what I was doing was, but every time I thought about giving up, I thought of the woman and how she had hung on for this long. Although I had no confirmation that she was okay, but I still felt I had no choice but to continue. The night was harsh, and my descent was harsher. It took me several hours to simply make my way down to this woman, despite the distance not being that long, honestly. When I reached her, I wasn't sure if she was sleeping or dead. Still, I could see her leg was wedged, and I did my best to keep her warm while I devised a method for getting her out. I had some gear, and decided I'd take part of my axe and try to chisel around the area her leg was in, hoping that, with time, I could get her out. I chiseled for most of the night, and by morning, I was exhausted. It was many hours that I chipped away, unsure if the woman was alive. Finally, after what felt like an eternity, I felt her leg slip free. I grabbed the woman and strapped her body before beginning my very long and very cold trip back up the mountain. I'm not entirely sure how much longer I spent trying to climb back up, but I had to take several breaks to recover my strength. There were several times I felt as though my body was going to give out completely, but every time I was about to give in, I kept thinking I needed to get this woman out of here. I couldn't give up, not just for her sake, but for my own. It wouldn't do a lot of good for both of us to die down here, hanging off the mountain. I had a family at home to return to, including a 3-year-old son. I knew this woman had a family as well, and I didn't want her family to have to live life without her.
A wailing determination pushed me forward. It felt as though the higher I got up, the worse the weather got. I gripped my teeth and continued climbing. Eventually, we made it to the top, and I slowly pulled myself onto the edge of the mountain. I collapsed and stared up at the sky before I heard the first signs of life from the young woman. She coughed and asked where she was. I explained to her she'd soon be at a hospital. We had just to make it to my truck. I asked her if she could hop on her leg, and she nodded yes. Together, we hobbled and hopped to my truck, where I got her inside and then moved inside the truck myself. I felt like I was dying as I started my truck up and headed down a path down the mountain and toward the nearest hospital. I don't remember much, as when I got there, I collapsed shortly after walking through the doors. The woman lived and we are still friends today. As for me, I lost a couple of toes to frostbite, but I'm doing well today. I'm getting ready to retire soon, but that is a rescue I'll never forget. I'm grateful that I'm alive today and I haven't been near as adventurous since that day. If I had to do what I did again, I wouldn't change anything about it. I'm a retired law enforcement officer who spent well over 20 years on the force in Washington. I'm female and I've had many memorable experiences in my career. None of these experiences were as memorable though as a search and rescue I was involved in midway through my time on the force. I and my team were tasked with a cave rescue. It's a dangerous type of search and rescue, as things are often dark and you usually can't see far in front of you. It leads to easy slips, falls, and other things that can quickly kill you if you're not careful. That isn't even mentioning all the tight spaces involved in such a search. You have to do a lot of training to be certified to do this type of search as well. This was actually my 7th time conducting such a search in my career. Right off, we found evidence of a broken line, and we felt fairly certain we would find someone dead or alive shortly after our entry into the cave. Looking back, I wish it had been that simple. The further we went into the cave, the less sure we were about ourselves. We had been searching for 2 individuals on this search who had been missing for a couple of days. A few hours into the search, we found a couple of rucksacks full of supplies. Most of the contents were scattered, and much of that had been inside the sacks were either scattered or missing altogether. Pushing forward, we called out, but all we heard were our own echoes. Increasingly concerned, we were looking for bodies instead of living people. We pushed through several narrow passages before coming across another unnerving sight. There was a piece of clothing, soaked in blood, laying on the ground. We followed a dry, bloody trail deeper into the cave. The trail eventually faded and was washed out by some water draining a sliver of an opening in the cave itself. Deciding we would continue in the general direction the trail was headed before it faded, we pushed onward. Calling out, we still received no response from anyone who may have entered the cave. We decided to push forward, and probably an hour later we came across a bloody knife and another trail of blood following it. I announced my team and myself and listened closely for a sound. There was nothing. The search was growing more frustrating as time went on and we once again hit a loss in the trail. There was a lot of blood, and then there simply wasn't. My team and I regrouped and we debated if we should continue the search. It was agreed we would go for another couple of hours, and if we found no one, we would mark our spot on the way out and come back the next day. We figured, knowing where we were headed, we'd be able to cut our time in half, as we would have a sense of direction. A couple of hours go by and we find no one, so we do as planned, marking our way through the cave and eventually exiting. The next morning, we started as early as possible and made quick headway on returning to where we left off. We'd gotten there in less than half the time it took us the day before. Because of this, we were able to make it much deeper on the 2nd day of the search. The day was coming to a close quickly, and we hadn't seen much sign of anything. I was discussing what our next move was with my team when we heard a very faint, "Help!" I called out and listened closely, and after a good 30 seconds, we heard the faint, "Help!" once again. We moved forward, spurred on by the hope that someone was still alive in the caves. I continued calling out, and as I did that, I could hear the faint call for help grow louder. We were getting closer to the spot where the voice was coming from. I remember a huge rush of excitement welling up within me as we got closer to the voice and it continued to get louder. That excitement lasted up until the point we crawled through the tightest pathway we encountered yet and came out on the other side. A young woman sat crying her eyes out. She had blood all over her and was chewing on something. And while crying, she was saying, "I had to eat." She seemed out of it and almost in a trance as she continued repeating, "I had to eat." Those words will never leave my mind again, never with the sight of that woman's dead husband, who she had been feeding on. Oh, the man was dead, and she had been eating the parts of him to survive. I did my best to comfort the woman, just holding her and assuring her it would be okay now. I remember thinking how stupid that must sound considering the situation. This woman would never be the same again, but I had to reassure her and convince her to come with us. After an hour of holding this woman in my own arms and trying to convince her to come with us and that we were there to help, the woman voluntarily came with us. It took quite a while, and we didn't rush as we wanted to make sure the woman could keep up with us. Eventually, though, as the sun was setting, we came scrambling out of the caves. We got the woman to a hospital, and I'm not entirely sure what happened to her after that. I've done plenty of search and rescue in my career, and I've seen all sorts of things in my career with law enforcement, but I've never seen anything like this before or since. I've been retired for a few years now, and I'll never forget finding that poor woman and those words she spoke through tearful eyes. "I had to eat." I've been part of mountain search and rescue for 30 years. In that time, I've seen all manner of things, both messed up and miraculous. The search I'm about to discuss had strangeness about it I haven't been a part of through my life since. I live in Alaska, and we have a lot of tough people living out this way. The search wasn't the strange part of this story. No, it's actually what happened after. We were looking for a man who had been missing for 48 hours, and it didn't take much time at all to find him. He was a bit out of the way, but he wasn't in an area that was hard to get to or anything. Upon getting to the man, I asked him if he was able to walk, and he shook his head no. He appeared to be in a lot of pain, and also seemed pretty shaken. At first, I thought maybe it was the cold, but it became quickly apparent that that wasn't what was bothering the man. Looking closer at him, he seemed to have claw marks and bites on him. I was concerned and asked him what happened. He told me, "It attacked me." I asked him what, but as I did, I was quickly greeted with the sound of loud growling. It sounded more like a roar, and as I looked over, there was a large bear staring down. I went for my knife, but before I got to it, the bear already reached my side and bit me, thrashing me about for a moment before throwing me to the side with such force I fell down the side of the hill and didn't stop until I hit a large group of rocks. I remember reeling in absolute agony. I didn't have a lot of time to think about the pain, though, as I heard screaming from up the hill. I stood up and rushed up the hill, adrenaline keeping the knife in my hand. The bear was biting into the man's stomach. I'd come to the rescue. I was pissed and in pain. I threw myself on the back of the bear and started stabbing anywhere I could connect. I heard the bear growl again, and it threw me from its back. My knife was still in the bear's hindside as it turned its attention to me. I stood and ran at the bear, but the bear was much bigger than me, As burly and big as a guy as I am, I'm still no match for a bear. It quickly turned and took me to the ground. The thing feasted on and tore at my arm like I was a rag doll. Blood was everywhere. I kicked the thing in the gut as much as possible. Eventually, I got it good as the dizzy blood poured out. The bear dropped on top of me, and I felt part of my bones breaking in my ribs as all this weight on top of me was literally crushing me to death. I reached with my free arm as my mangled arm prevented the thing from taking a chunk of my neck. The bear shook my mangled arm violently, and I felt my bone snap. I cried out in anguish, and I finally felt the grip on my knife. I pulled it out, stabbing a few times before stabbing the bear in the eye. This finally got the bear off of me, and I screamed for help, hoping one of my team members would hear me. The bear was pawing at its eye, trying to get it out, in what sounded like pain grunts. I couldn't move as the bear ran off. I faintly heard the sound of my team members as I passed out from exhaustion and blood loss. When I awoke, I was missing most of my right arm. The doctors had to amputate my arm, and I spent a good month in the hospital. The man I fought to protect sadly died of a heart attack, mostly due to his injuries and the shock he'd endured. I would never forgive myself for being unable to save the guy. He was older, in his late 50s, and I literally gave part of myself to the man. Sadly, things don't always turn out the way we'd like them in life. His family was more forgiving of me than I will ever be of myself. I don't have the words to convey the guilt I still feel even to this day about not being there soon enough and not being able to fend the bear off long enough to save the man. It's a burden I will carry with me for the rest of my life. I know I gave my everything to save the man, but that doesn't make me feel any happier about how, you know, this all ended. I have an interesting story to share about my time in search and rescue in Montana. It was the dead of winter in 1992, and my team and I were on the hunt for several missing persons. You have to understand, we had several odd missing persons happen over the course of that year. People were hiking sometimes, even on the trail, and simply running and never returning. So, we had a bit of a busy year, as we had been called out to search for several people, more than usual for the year. This time, though, it was different. While we were searching for several missing persons, or at least evidence of their whereabouts, our priority was the latest missing person, a 2-year-old who, while his family was on a hike, went missing. The mother and father of the child claimed they looked away to get some snacks for maybe 3 seconds with their son, and then all of a sudden, he was gone. He was right next to them 1 second, and then gone the next. They asked him if he wanted a snack, and noticed he wasn't giving a response. When they turned to look back at him, he was nowhere to be found. They immediately contacted law enforcement, and we put a team together to look for the child while the police continued to question the family. Search and rescue can be a tough gig, but it's infinitely worse when you're tasked with finding a child. As a father myself, I would be inconsolable if my child went missing with no trace. All I would do is search nonstop for him. So needless to say, finding this child was a priority. The first day was a long one, but we didn't find anyone. The day turned into a week. The week turned into 2 weeks. By this point, the majority of the search and rescue resources were feeling the grim air and the likely nature of the situation. We all knew at 2 weeks a child is definitely not, you know, gonna make it, especially at only 2 years old. That said, we weren't willing to give up and continued to press on with our search. A month into the search and we had to relinquish the majority of our resources. I continue with a small group to look for this kid. We were very well looking for a body at this point. We were just looking for closure for the family. The grim likelihood in mind, we continued our search. We found a pair of clothes that seemed like it would fit a 2-year-old. We showed the family the clothing, and the reaction said it all. The wife was understandably shaken and crying, and we all feared the worst, but we hadn't found a body just yet. After a month had gone by and the search was officially closed, still, I couldn't let it go, so I continued looking for the child. The family continued to hold out hope, but you can see in their eyes, they believed it was a false hope. Wanting to bring this family closure and answers, I kept looking. I eventually happened upon a small toy bulldozer. Again, I brought this to the family and they confirmed it was his. I told them I'd continue my search and I wouldn't give up until I found out what happened. This meant I was putting a lot of my off-duty time into searching this. I no longer had a team to assist me. Feeling for this family and wanting to bring them answers, I decided to take a weekend to continue my search at night. It was on a Saturday night when I camped the area and brought all the gear and lighting I could carry with me. I searched through the night to no avail. Deciding to get some sleep at around 2 in the morning, I turned in, feeling defeated and upset that I still had no sign of this kid. At about 4:40 in the morning, I was woken to a bright flash of light. It was only visible for a split second. It was bright enough to make me wake up, but it was gone as quickly as it happened. Stepping out of my tent, tired and groggy as well, I heard out from the woods not far from me. It sounded like crying. The crying was very easy to hear. As I walked forward, I had to rub my eyes a few times to make sure I wasn't seeing things. Standing before me, in a diaper, was a child that looked to be about 2 years old and matched the description of the child who was missing. I couldn't believe my eyes, and part of me thought I was still dreaming. I slapped myself and rubbed my eyes again. Before it was apparent, I was definitely awake and the kid was definitely standing there. I crouched down, arms out, and tried to get the kid to, come to me, reassuring them that it would be okay. After some coaxing, he came with me, and I carried him to my truck where I drove him to a hospital and called the family. The family came down and confirmed it was their son. I'm still in shock to this day that the kid was relatively unscathed and seemed well fed. I don't know how to explain it, and the kid wasn't very forthcoming about where he had been. Still, none of that mattered at that moment. What mattered is that the kid was okay. What mattered is that he was reunited with his family once again. The strange nature of this reappearance will likely never be solved, and I'm not sure what that light was. Maybe someone found the kid and brought him back to the area. Maybe there's another explanation entirely. But I'm just grateful that he is back where he belongs. His family couldn't be happier either. I join them every Thanksgiving and consider them family. Thanks for listening to these creepy and downright strange search and rescue stories. I don't know about you guys, but being a search and rescue volunteer is something that I would actually really like to do if I ever got the opportunity. But I hope I never have any experiences like these people do. I just want to try to help people. Don't want to be messing with no spookily-dookily stuff out there in those woods. If you enjoyed these stories, please be sure to hit that like button as it helps me out a ton. If you're new to the channel, why not subscribe and turn on notifications to never miss a new video, as I make them almost every single day in all things natural and supernatural. If you have a story you would like to share in a future video, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this show going. If you're on the go and don't have data all the time, you can download your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories at iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Stitcher Radio, and just about every other major podcasting platform out there. Thank you guys, as always, for supporting the Swamp. We're less than 1,000 subscribers away now to 150,000 subscribers. That's absolutely insane. Let's see if we can't hit that before the end of the year. And if you made it all the way to the end, today's code word is green aura. Comment that down below to confuse anybody who didn't make it to the end and to let me know how many of you actually do make it to the end. Tally ho, my friends.